Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of The Advisors on the Next Stage Business Radio Network, designed to bring you quality information, resources, and advice to keep your business moving in the right direction. Now here's your host, Pamela Muldoon.
And welcome once again to the Next Stage Business Radio Network and another program of The Advisors. Of course, this is our weekly show for us, The Advisors, to share with you our insights, advice, tips, tricks, all sorts of information for you as a business owner or someone in business so that you can take your business to the next direction it needs to go. Thank you so much for being along for the ride with us today. We have an excellent show, as we always do, of course, but we have an excellent show today. This is a topic that is so near and dear to my heart personally, especially here in 2010 as we move into this new big social space and it gets bigger and bigger. It's social media and the law. So we're going to, in just a minute or two, chat with our two guests, our two advisors today. We have back on deck Jeff O'Brien. He is a business attorney with Mansfield, Panic & Cohen. And, of course, we also have Jennifer Kane, and she has a company here in the Twin Cities, Kane Consulting Social Media and PR. I have two great experts on this topic. We're going to dive in just a minute. Before we do, as I always do, I want to make sure that you, as our listeners, who we appreciate so much, are checking us out even when we're not live on the air, on the online air. So, of course, we have our website, nextstagebusinessradio.com. Check it out. You can see all of our advisors. We're going to be adding new programming as we finish out 2010. Of course, 2011 will bring some exciting things as well. So stay on top of that with our website. We have a Facebook fan page, or as our friend Brian Salas says, brand page. I'm totally into Brian this week. I know Jennifer and I will have a great conversation today with Jeff. And, of course, that is Facebook.com, NSB Radio Network. We also are out on Twitter, on the Twitter sphere, the Twitter space. At NSB Radio Network is the Twitter handle. And let's see, what else do we have? We have that LinkedIn group. We are on LinkedIn. We do understand that there's a lot of professional folks out there that need to understand what we're doing. So join our LinkedIn group, Next Stage Business Radio Network. And if you can't catch us live, not a problem. This is so not an issue, guys. We archive these shows immediately on the Blog Talk platform, as well as we have an iTunes channel. So if you have an iPhone, an iPod, an iPad, an anything, go ahead and go to iTunes and then just subscribe to our channel, and you can get us downloaded into your podcast link immediately as soon as we're done. So there you go. So we're going to lock and load, as I like to say, and get her done, because I am a small-town Minnesota girl who, you know, has a little NASCAR language once in a while. And we're going to talk social media and the law. So welcome once again, Mr. Jeffrey O'Brien from Mansfield, Panic & Cohen. So great to have you on the show, as always.
Well, it's great to be back, and I'm looking forward to talking about this topic.
We're going
to
have fun. Yes, this is going to be a good one. I know you're big in the Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn world, social media, and the law. It's something you do in the legal area. You teach a lot of other attorneys how to do this better. So we're going to have a really great conversation with, of course, one of our new advisors, Jennifer Kane from Kane Consulting here in the Twin Cities. Her area specifically is social media and public relations. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is going to be so much fun. Okay, we're going to dive in. I know I keep saying it's fun because I love this social media stuff, being in marketing myself, and, of course, it's no accident, ladies and gentlemen, that we ended up on internet radio. It's not an accident. It's kind of a big thing, this internet, wouldn't you say?
I think it's a keeper.
I think it's a keeper. Yeah. I like that. Yep, yeah. I think it's a keeper. So we're going to dive in, and we've got a lot of ground to cover. So let's start at the basics of the big question, why. So why is this topic, the legal part of social media, why should I, as a small business owner or a medium-sized business owner, why is this important to me?
I think a lot of small business owners are looking at social media as a marketing tool.
Yeah.
But they're also looking at it with the lens of traditional marketing. And in the past, you put information out there in a brochure or on a sign or in an email list, and it was something that was fairly controlled, and you weren't necessarily open to liability issues with that content.
Sure.
The minute that small businesses, and large businesses for that matter, started establishing social channels for their company, particularly blogs, they became publishers.
Okay, yep.
In the publishing industry, for a long time, there have been rules and regulations about, if somebody is paying you to cover something, you need to disclose that. If you are a reporter, you need to be unbiased in your reporting. And the people that are coming from traditional PR backgrounds or traditional journalism backgrounds are pretty much understand those are the rules of the trade.
Right.
What happened was is that we empowered gobs and gobs and gobs of people to do this same sort of process and didn't give them that same information. So I think that it's important for companies to understand when they're engaging in dialogue with people and sharing information, sometimes the information that they're sharing can be biased. Sometimes it could offend people. Sometimes you may be mentioning things that are probably not something that you should be talking about.
The TMI factor, as I like to say.
The TMI factor is a big problem. And then also there is a problem of you putting information out there in these channels and the fact that it goes places and it can be stolen.
Uh-huh.
And particularly I work with a lot of small business owners that work in creative fields, photographers or designers, and these people are regularly seeing their stuff skinned off of a site and taken somewhere else.
Right, right.
So it's not just a content issue. It can be also imagery and things like that. So it's kind of a bigger issue of, you know, what is it that you're saying? And then when you say something, what happens to it? And is it yours still? Or
right.
Does somebody else now own it?
You know, it's a really great question. You know, is it still yours? It's out on the internet, this open space that's pretty non-regulated right now. It's, you know, the wild, wild west, as we like to say, especially in the social media space. It's a little yeehaw out there, okay? So from an attorney's perspective, is this my stuff? When I put it out there, is it really mine? Should I be, and if it is, but are there ways that I can make sure that it's mine?
Yeah, well, you know, I always, you know, we are, like you said, we are in a new frontier. I mean, this was, people, you know, I have friends and, you know, people tease me and call me the social media lawyer, but I'm a business and real estate lawyer. I just started using this stuff to market my practice.
Right.
And kind of gravitated over to this kind of ever-evolving area of the law called, you know, there is, you know, social media law, you know, e-commerce and internet law and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because it's new, it's evolving. And what the one basic rule is, all the same rules that would apply to something you publish in a magazine or a newspaper or say on the radio or on TV, those same rules apply in online and in social media. So yes, when you write a blog post, you are a publisher. And, you know, just like if you write a magazine article or a journal article and you take something from somebody else's magazine article or journal
right.
article and put it in there without citation, without giving credit, and say it as your own, same thing with a blog post. If you lift somebody's blog post, put it up on your site and take credit for it, that's plagiarism just as if you had done that in a magazine article. There's no difference.
It's fascinating to me because it's on the internet, so thousands of eyeballs can see this.
Yep.
And it's done in real time. So it's you have to wonder when folks are doing this, are they that brave or are they just that ignorant?
I think a lot of times people don't even realize that it's happening.
Yeah.
You know, the first time that I read my own content on somebody else's site,
yes.
It was startling. And I thought, you know,
wait a minute, that's really good.
That's really good. Right. Good job, Jen. Apparently it got stolen. You know, the first time that happens, it's a little bit jarring, but the reality is that, you know, phrases like, I just taught a class last night, and I put up a slide, and the slide said, a Facebook fan page is not a social media strategy, and then I put it in quotes,
yep.
And underneath it I put, a blog that Jen read today.
Right.
And I said to the class, I must have read 20 blogs today, and I remember this, but I can't go back and find it. And so I'm going to tell you I didn't make up this line. I think it's a very clever line, and if you're listening,
right.
Sir or ma'am.
Whoever it was who wrote that.
Very good job. but, you know, 6 months from now, that could be a standard line that I'm using, right?
Right,
And
right.
It could be a line that a lot of people are using. So some of this language becomes pretty standardized language, like you should be really transparent and authentic in your social channels. Well, that's something people yep. are saying in many different ways, shapes, and forms.
Exactly.
And if you're a person who is sitting in the center of a great deal of aggregated and syndicated content, a lot of times you can't tell who did this come from. If it's coming, you know, through a particular feed or via somebody else, it's very difficult to know, like, who actually wrote this. Because
right.
that information starts to get stripped off.
Yep.
The more layers of, it's kind of like when you're playing telephone or you're passing a message around a group,
yes.
the further away it gets from you, the more it gets distorted.
Yes.
It's the same sort of thing, and the ownership gets more distorted because sometimes the language gets distorted. At the end of the circle, it's a different sort of spin.
Right.
So does that mean that I now own it because it's my spin?
Well, and I think you made a valid point with I don't think a lot of this is even intentional. You
no.
know,
I
really do believe, I mean, and we'll talk more about the intentional in a minute here, but I really do believe, and especially as you were talking, Jen, I'm thinking about just the concept of retweeting and retweeting a retweet, and that's as far as I'm going to go because that's really hard to say. But the more that gets over and over, you have to make it a smaller, you know, 140
yep.
characters fills up really fast. It's, of course, what started out yesterday and is now being tweeted today could have a whole different feel to it, you know. So that's kind of a microblog way of really this content in a major, in a more of a bigger blog format, or even in an article you've written, or a paragraph that was inside of an article, or something like that. And I think you made a valid point as too, in terms of the publishers from the past media were trained to be doing the citation, to be trained in terms of some of these very specific ways to protect not only your voice but the voice of people you're interviewing, for example, like I'm doing today. You and I, and I'll just say you and I as a general, the average business owner putting their content out for the first time on a blog or on a Facebook status or whatever it may be, they haven't gone through this training. So
no.
Where do they start? How can we start to protect ourselves or be more aware? What are some things from the legal standpoint? How can, if I see like Jen that I saw it's out there, what are my repercussions? What can I do?
Well, if you've got something that's yours that you're seeing posted on, you know, somebody else's site without credit and things like that, I mean, anytime you're dealing with intellectual property rights and their, you know, and the violation of those rights,
yes.
which copyright, trademark, all these things are, that's intellectual property, and, you know, all these, you know, your Facebook posts, your tweets, your blog posts, those are your intellectual property. It's a little bit, and if anybody that is listening, see my Facebook page, is almost like the old David Letterman, Larry Bud Melman, when NBC claimed that was actually quote-unquote intellectual property.
Right.
As much as we didn't think it was intellectual, it was theirs, right? So, you know, some, you know, whatever we're posting online, some of us may think it might be juvenile or whatever, but it's our intellectual property.
Yeah.
The lawyers, you go to a lawyer and you always ask, okay, what can I do? The first thing is always the cease and desist letter from the attorney to, you know, basically take it, you know, retract it.
Right.
You know, in the old days it was, you know, if it was a newspaper story and there had been a libel, you know, defamation issue or something like that, the attorney would send a cease and desist letter, demand letter for a retraction to the newspaper threatening legal action. Newspaper maybe runs a retraction the next week or something.
Sure.
Like that and corrects it. It's harder in cyberspace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're asking, I mean, you're talking about something getting picked up in the Google search engines or something on Facebook. And, you know, my understanding is with Facebook in particular, unless it's something pornographic, they're not taking it down.
Right.
Nope.
Google, you can, you know, same thing. They have a very stringent policy. They have a very, it is really a lot of anything goes. And so when it comes to the strategy for how to combat it, you know, it comes down to there's the legal way of the cease and desist versus, well, do you go hire your SEO guy to, you know, put a bunch of positive content out
right.
there or something to push
yeah.
it further
dilute
down
it.
On the Google
right.
search.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, so it, in that respect, it is a little bit of a game changer in terms of how you combat it because there may, the traditional way of enforcing ends up, you know, it doesn't always work.
Well, and it's not as easy to get something off the internet as it would say, you know, back in the day within the newspaper. It was, you know, now the newspaper is even online, right? So it didn't live and breathe in a public forum forever. Mm-hmm. There was a point where it was finite, or you had to go to the actual, mm-hmm. you know, the Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press and actually look at the archive
right.
to,
yeah.
or pull it up from, you know, what were those things in the library? The microfiche?
Microfiche.
Yeah.
I'm totally having a flashback, people.
In some ways, though, especially with the blogging, you know, in trying to, you think about from a compliance standpoint, if you're writing blog posts and trying to avoid having issues with stealing somebody's material and getting that cease and desist letter, that, you know, whatever, the nasty email or something, it's almost easier to comply by virtue of adding the link to wherever the original source was.
Sure.
As opposed to having to write an article and having to cite this and quote this and quote that. You know, if I want to write, if the local paper has a story about something pertaining to real estate law and I want to make a comment on it, I'll say, such and such paper posted an interesting article about this, and they'll have a link somewhere in that line to the article, and then I'll go into my commentary.
Right,
To me, it's almost easier to comply. Yeah. It might be harder to enforce, but it's easier from the publisher, from the author standpoint, to avoid problems.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to make a point during this show to talk about Creative Commons, because Creative Commons almost functions in the same way that the McGruff the Crime Dog sticker on your door did. And it's saying ahead of time, I understand that this content will go other places.
Okay.
It's not necessarily saying even that you're going to steal it, but that you may syndicate it to your network, you may choose to incorporate it into a post that you're inspired to write. And what a Creative Commons license allows you to do is to put identification on your post that says, you may use this, but you must cite that I wrote it.
Okay.
Or you may use this, but you must cite that I wrote it and then license it yourself. Or you may use this, but you must cite that I wrote it and you cannot make any money off of it.
Okay.
You get to choose ahead of time. And again, like Jeffrey's saying, this is not something that you can necessarily enforce or you would want to enforce because there's going to be a lot of instances of it going a lot of places.
Right.
But it's that sticker on the door that says, I'm watching you, people.
Right.
you can also set up a fair share account. And what a fair share account is basically, it's a tracking mechanism. And so if you have a blog, particularly, it doesn't work as well for a static page like the home page of your site. But if you have anything that can be picked up via RSS feed, any sort of content feed that you have like a blog, you can set up a fair share account for that, and the fair share account, kind of like a Google alert, can give you a report saying, we're seeing this somewhere else.
Okay.
So if you have the combined two of the Creative Commons saying, yes, people, but please respect my my wishes right here,
yep.
And then you have a fair share account to kind of give it some teeth and say, like, seriously, lady, I said you could use
right.
it, but you needed to do this one little thing, and I didn't think that was such a big thing to ask.
Right.
You know, it is a little bit of, people just kind of using good judgment and, being fair to other people, which is why it's called a fair share account. But it does say to the people who are reading your stuff, I'm watching this stuff.
Right.
And I know this is my intellectual property, and I am making it known to you that I don't enjoy people stealing that.
Well, and you bring up a point in terms of, in a way, we're all kind of watching for each other, whether
yeah.
we realize it or not. It's in a non-regulated environment, we are more than ever kind of relying on our friends, followers, fans, connections to kind of keep an eye on things for us, even if it's not directly implied. And so I know that if I see something of Jeff's on someone else's and it isn't indicated, I can say, hey, Jeff, you wear this. Or, if he hasn't gone through this process of doing the self-monitoring, which is really the next piece of this conversation we need to talk about, because to really know that you are being, your property is being stolen, you have to actually, check it out once in a while, right? So the online management, a reputation management, again, this is a conversation that has a lot of moving parts. But in terms of being able to just stay connected to what is being talked about, you, your company, the information you share, this is one of the key reasons, people, you have to have an online management system in your company. You have to. It's kind
of not listening is not an option.
It's a huge deal. So how do we start that? I'm a small business owner. I know I work in the marketing arena, so the big pushback I get is time. Who's got time for that? So how do we start to actually monitor ourselves online? What are some good, you've mentioned, Creative Commons, Fair Share is two great tools and ways to do that. But how can I start this consistency of keeping eye on myself, basically?
You want to start with your keywords. And your keywords are your name plus your company name, if you have a product or service that you sell. I mean, if you're a custom framer, you don't want to set up an alert for custom framing because there'll be a fire hose of information.
Right.
But Joe Brown and custom framing is probably going to find you something that's about you particular if that's your name. So something as simple as setting up a Google alert that is going to send you an email and saying, this news just popped up with these two phrases in it. is a very simple and free way to kind of monitor your information on a basic level. A lot of social dashboards, I think a lot of people think of them as Twitter tools because they started out that way. Like
sure.
Seismic and Hootsuite and TweetDeck, obviously, it has the word tweet in
it. And the fact that we say these things without in a straight face.
We're not giggling at all.
It still does make me laugh a little
but
bit.
But you can also use those tools. You can set up columns within those tools to monitor your keywords as well so that you have this dashboard. We call it our air traffic control for your social channel.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
And
yeah.
You're able to get a hit. You can also use this proactively if you get a hit and somebody's saying, I'm looking to get custom framing done in Minneapolis. Does anybody have a lead? And you're this guy. You can
right.
say, hey, I can help you. And that's, a more refined use of the space. But at the very least, you should be looking for those hits. And if you have a lot of conversations happening about you or a lot of spaces, you should hire a company to help you do that. And that is something that we do for larger companies
right.
that have multiple brands, or they have a brand that has kind of a generic name and it can be talked about in a lot of different ways. And they're going to get thousands of hits of information. And you need kind of tools with a little bit more heft behind them
yeah.
to process all
right.
of those hits and categorize them and to give you a sense of the overall sentiment and distribution and where they're coming from. But just to set up a Google alert can be very empowering for a small business owner.
Yes.
Just to get that hit and say, hey, somebody just said my name, and now I know about it.
Well, and it's interesting because I've had the pleasure of speaking to some high school students this past year, and I've actually, at the age of 17 and 18, I'm encouraging them to set up Google alerts on their name. So, we're talking obviously business here, but this is a self-brand, every single one of us, regardless of who we are or what we do or where our walk in life is right now, is really a self-brand online, and,
mm-hmm.
and we need to be paying attention. And so I'm now monitoring myself, and I'm seeing some of this interesting activity. And let's say it's a negative, something you mentioned, slander, as a someone saying something about you, or maybe you're seeing something about other people that you know. You are doing some
yep.
policing. What are some of the things that I can do? I mean, how can I deal with that? I mean, I think there's two parts to this question. There's a legal part, Jeff, which I want you to address, and then there's kind of a brand marketing part
yeah.
to this as well, because at the end of the day, reputation
yeah.
also has a lot of
there's
layers.
There's a bit of a psychological aspect as
yeah.
well. A lot of clients, when I'm starting to talk to them about should I enter the social space, their first thing is, what if people are saying bad things about us?
Right.
Because that's an icky feeling.
Yeah.
And I always say to them, the reality is people are saying bad things about you right now. You just don't know it.
Right.
And that's something, when you're talking smack about a person all the time and then you stop and you think, if I talk this way about that lady all the time, I wonder if she ever talks to her friends about me. Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
That's the answer
to
that.
If there's a kitchen with women in it and a cup of coffee involved. I know I grew up on the farm in Minnesota, and the
exactly.
ladies were chatting all the time, so I always use that as my reference point, that
exactly.
We're either in a bar or at, we're shopping or we're at the local club, whatever, but we are talking about you or maybe your industry
yeah.
or something.
So you accept
yeah.
going in, there will be people
yes.
saying things I don't like, because that is the nature of social media, and if you're inherently uncomfortable with that, don't go there
yeah.
to begin with.
Yeah.
So then it becomes about how do you handle those comments, and some of them are, again, very kind of psychological and brand management. If somebody says, I think what you do is horrible, you say, thanks for sharing.
Right.
Or I'm sorry you feel that way. It's the same thing if you said to me, I think your outfit's ugly. I'd be like, well, I did the best I could, Pamela.
She actually looks really funky today, guys.
You respond how you would normally with a person.
Right.
Now, if they're saying something that is, that you create a faulty product, that you are duping your customers, now then you're getting into the area of slander. And that's where I toss to Jeffrey, because
right.
I don't know what to say then.
Now what? So someone has said something. They've said, I've got a faulty product, or, it's something that could be truly damaging to the reputation in terms of direct selling of the product or service.
Right. Well, and I've written before, a lot of people that throw out the term defamation, right? Well, defamation starts with a false statement.
Okay.
And I've heard a little bit of this on, some news stories out there about certain companies that might pursue somebody for saying something on Twitter about their product or their service. Okay. Now there's a difference between if I go to Burger Joint A in town, and I order a bacon cheeseburger and I get a chicken sandwich. Okay. If I put out there this restaurant is awful and these people are morons and all this kind of stuff, they probably might be in some trouble for that. If you say I ordered a cheeseburger and I got a chicken sandwich. Nothing false about that. It may damage the reputation of that restaurant.
Right. It might make you a little frustrated.
But there's nothing false about that.
Right.
That's not defamation.
Okay.
Right? So it has to be a false statement. It has to be published. And in publishing means just, communicated to someone else, to a third party. And it has to cause damages to that, the party who was, who the statement was made about. Okay?
Right.
And that's another that's the very tricky part when it comes to this is, well, how do you prove that there's damages? How do you prove that your reputation was harmed? As, even if you can prove that you have a false statement, even if you can prove that it tended to lower your image, how do you prove that you were damaged by it? And that's so there's a lot of,
well, and that's hard to do offline.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
We're not really talking
exactly.
about this. This isn't an internet-only situation.
Yeah.
Right.
It just happens to be just more accessible, more eyeballs, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right?
We're back to the same issue of the traditional rules apply.
Yeah.
And defamation is no less difficult to try to prove online than it is in the world at large.
Right.
So I have a question for you, Jeffrey. So let's say I go to your restaurant and I get a sandwich and there's a fly in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I take a picture and I tweet that picture and it goes to my network and you suddenly now have this big PR problem of people think you don't have a very clean restaurant. Do I have any recourse other than to just turn on the good PR part of my business to do anything about that?
I think in that case, I come back to you. You took a picture of something that actually happened and you put it out there.
Sure.
I think for the business, I think you hear this with some of the the big companies. I think for a time, I don't know if they're still doing it, but Sears is one of them. Comcast, Best Buy, I think, is one where they have. A person appointed to be involved, be on Twitter monitoring,
right?
Complaints about their products or their services, and they aren't doing it for the purposes of bringing legal action. They're looking at it as a customer service angle,
right,
so that they can contact the person and address the issue. And I just saw, and I completely spaced as to what company it was, but someone had just pointed out that said, I complained about this, and they gave credit where credit was due. They said, I complained about this yesterday. Within X number of hours, they responded,
yep.
Way to go.
Oh, I've had that. I actually test the social space, and I will give a shout-out to Comcast because that happened to me personally a few months ago, and I did the Comcast Cares, and within the day, even if they couldn't resolve it because the squirrel chewed through the cable, they couldn't resolve it immediately. The fact that they got back to me and responded to me, went up the leadership ladder on Twitter. They also made the phone call back to my home within 15, 20 minutes or something like that. And so the stuff does work. And you're right. It starts as a kind of a customer service brand management. But what a great way. And this is, we're talking about big brands here. But from a small business standpoint, this is, I think, if I'm hearing you guys correctly, this is important enough to start thinking, how can I find time in my own business, or who should I be bringing into my business to start this process? Because this is a flat world,
yep.
We need, and there's pros and cons to everything, but how exciting that we have this amazing space to level the playing field like never before. Yet we need to remind our business owners, which is why I do this show, why we need to be taking some activity. It's not just busy, fun, tweeting with your friends. This is serious business stuff, and people are taking your stuff, stealing it, sharing it. You need to protect it. You need to protect yourself and your business. And as you guys were sharing examples, the one that popped into my head, and it's entirely up to you if you want to go there because this is kind of an impromptu thing. Oh, my goodness. But Domino's Pizza, a couple of years, it was not even 2 years ago, it's probably a year and a half. They, I'm impressed with what they're doing this year. Domino's Pizza had this very issue. I guess, you know, you referred to the fly in the,
it was so much worse than a fly. Let's just say that.
And I don't think you can find the video anymore. I think it's been pulled because they have attorneys. This definitely happened. Now, this was something, just for those of you that aren't familiar, I'm not going to go into detail, but there was a video that was done by, at the time, employees of the company sharing how a pizza was, quote unquote, really made. That's all I'm going to say. It happened to go viral, and, of course, now they did lose money, right, Jeff? So in this particular situation, there is a direct correlation between something that was put on the space, the Internet space, and the loss of profit.
Right.
And so they were able to take care of those things behind the scenes. But from a marketing and a serving standpoint, Jen, one of the reasons they lost money, if I recall this, was because they weren't monitoring their brand in real time.
I actually have said to clients, I think in the future, it's kind of the Andy Warhol, everybody's going to be famous for 15 minutes or whatever, that in the future, everybody's going to have their Domino's moment.
Right.
And I tell clients that because that's just the nature of people.
Yeah.
You're going to hire somebody that's going to do a dumb thing, and they're going to take a picture of it, and they're going to tweet. I mean, this is just... The information is so porous, and the screen between what happens in reality and what gets published is instantaneous now.
Right.
So that's going to happen, again, with the accepting somebody's going to say something bad, also to accept that, it's going to happen, and I'm going to need to get on top of that.
Right.
One thing that I tell companies that can be really helpful is, from a PR perspective, it is so much more powerful for you to have something happen, let's say like this Domino's situation, and to have your community of supporters who you've done a very good job of talking to, sharing information with, responding when they have concerns, your community of supporters steps in and says, hey guys, it's not fair to say that about Domino's.
Right.
They're really trying right now.
Yep.
That is so much more effective than you issuing a press release that says, we are terribly nice people who didn't mean to have that happen at all.
Please forgive us. Yes.
And so we've seen a number of instances where somebody will write a blog post and there will be, we call them trolls, and a troll will get on and just say, I hate you, I hate this post, I whatever. And the author of the post doesn't even have to say anything because their community of supporters say, you know what, I've shopped in this store.
Yeah.
And they care about their customers. And so that is the value of investing in your social network, because your social network will act as a small army of reputation managers.
Oh, I like that, small army. It's so true. They become almost more passionate about your brand than you realize, or that you are even sometimes. And that is the beauty of, and Jen, we will have a conversation in the near future just around this marketing, brand and marketing on social media. But absolutely, this is, if one person, it's kind of that adage, if one person says something bad and 10 are saying something good, who are you really going to believe? Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, there's something about that. And that's really more of an indirect brand management that just kind of happens from being in the space on a consistent basis. I mean, we have to, the word consistency, I think, has to be definitely applied here, because you can't monitor your brand once every 30 days here, people. This is, a daily, something that you need to be on top of. And of course, the bigger the brand, the more that people are going to talk about you in some way, shape, or form. Now, one of the things that's kind of new in the space, because, we talked about the thousands of eyeballs, right? And if I'm a brand, a company, a service that really wants to get my product in front of people, we're going to start paying attention to who has the most followers, who's a high influencer, who has that influential following, friend, fan base, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's this new thing, and new being a subjective term here, but there's this new thing about actually getting paid to tweet for other people, or to be paid to, I think the blogging for someone else has been around for some time, but now the concept of doing Facebooking, and this isn't just hiring a social media person. I mean, we're talking, Jeff, I probably shouldn't use the attorney in this one, but.
You just Kim Kardashian.
Oh, that's perfect,
that's good, because she's never going to talk to us in real life, so this is good.
She may never actually Google us either,
yeah,
so
that's fine.
Bless her heart.
Yeah.
But yes, because Kim Kardashian does this now. And so what is this? Because I think there's a lot of people that don't even know this exists, that there are people that do this, or there are services out there that do this. And then, of course, what are the legal ramifications? We want to make sure we talk about that. So
when we talk about media coverage, we talk about three different buckets of coverage. There's the earned, the owned, and the paid. And obviously the most valuable bucket is the earned. This is people who are just, you know, a reporter calls you and says, I heard your business is awesome. Can I write an article about you?
Right.
Somebody writes a blog post and they mention great service at whatever your company. Stuff you earn is incredibly valuable because it's, again, your army coming together.
Absolutely.
And, you know, their word kind of rising to the top. Own coverage is coverage that you put up about yourself, which a lot of companies do. It's more of the self-promotional sort of thing, and there's nothing wrong with that as well. Paid coverage is just what it is. You're paying for somebody to go out and talk about you. That is a fine thing to do. However, well, you know, to go back to the beginning of our talk, talking about, you know, if you were a reporter back in the day and you were supposed to talk about, you know, let's say you're reviewing a new widget and it breaks.
Right.
If you're getting paid a lot of money, you might leave that out of the review sort of thing. and that would be an unethical sort of practice.
Okay.
Or if I have a client who is, let's say, a hotel, and I just talk about this hotel all the time on my feeds about I love staying there, I think their staff is great and whatever. If they're a client of mine and I'm either being paid with cash or in kind, either one, I need to disclose that to my audience.
Okay.
So I need to say client. That's all I have to say. I don't have to say they're giving me a lot of money, whatever, the complexity of the relationship, how, you know, what you choose to disclose, the complexity of it is up to you. But you do need to disclose if you are getting money or in-kind services in return for the coverage you're giving someone. So a lot of the social channels, Twitter in particular, has promoted tweets. Very, very transparent. There's a little button. It says promoted tweets. I was looking at one yesterday. You click on it, it's like paid for the, you know, by the people who are doing the movie Paranormal Activity 2.
Okay.
They paid for this. And what Twitter likes about the way that they're doing it is these are organic tweets that already existed. But so it's not like an ad that's being placed within your Twitter stream. It's their ongoing social communications, but given a little bit of a supercharge.
Okay, a little bit of a bump to get retweeted or to have someone else pull it from the stream and share it with their people.
But very, very transparent. Big button there that says somebody paid to get this spot right here. And I think people get that from an advertising perspective, but I think the nuance of my client says something, and so I just like, oh, shout out to so-and-so. I ate there last night. It's an awesome restaurant.
Right.
It's very enticing to do that. And I see a lot of companies do this all the time.
Really? Interesting.
And so, you know, this is an FTC guideline, but it is not a law.
Okay. Okay.
So it doesn't have a lot of teeth. So it's, I don't know if I could call one of those companies and say, you're bad.
wrong? And again, I think what we're kind of there's two sides that I'm kind of balancing here: the marketing brand reputation side with the legal side and what's right or wrong. So now, Jennifer mentioned the FTC, which is of course the Federal Trade Commission. For those folks out there that are what's that? And believe it or not, there are commissions that do pay attention to even some of the things that are going on the internet on our wild, wild west. So from a legal perspective, what Jen was sharing in terms of I get paid either in kind or with payment to tweet about you or share information about you, if I'm considering that for my business, what are some things that I should be considering talking to you about?
If you're considering paying somebody to do it, well,
putting the marketing piece of it aside.
Yeah. I think it depends in terms of how you're paying somebody to do it. If you're going to hire some outside party to set up a Twitter handle for your company name and go out and spam the Twitterverse about your products and services, that's one thing. If you're going to, you know, come to me or come to Jen and say, I want to pay you to say some nice things about me because you guys have a good reputation online and everything, and that'll help me. Now you're talking about when it comes to a third party saying good things about your business, they have to disclose that they're being paid to say good things about you. Same thing with the blog, you know, about blog posts. These FTC guidelines that we were talking about, they are just guidelines. It's basically the name of the game is disclosure, right? The concept behind it is, you know, people are coming to reading your stuff and they think that you're genuinely loving this product or service and you think it's just great and you want the world to know that. But if you're being paid behind the scenes, then it takes away the genuineness. There's a consumer, you know, protection issue there. Okay, so that's where the FTC is charged with being able to go in and regulate those things, hence the rules on internet advertising on blog sites. And I've written posts where, you know, I'll go, you know, I do a lot of face-to-face networking, and I'll sit down for coffee with somebody, and they'll, you know, educate me about some interesting concept of business or real estate or something.
Absolutely.
And I just want to talk about it. And I'll mention, hey, you know, I had coffee with a good friend of mine, such and such, and I put a link to their website, and they talked about this, and here's what we talked about. You didn't pay me to do it.
Right, right.
You didn't, you know, it's just, I thought it was an interesting thing that people would be interested in knowing about. So it was, you know, completely altruistic that I said, this is a good thing.
Which is like the engine that drives social media.
Yeah.
It's people sharing stuff.
Right.
Right.
They like,
right.
Don't like, with other people.
Yep.
That's all it is.
And we're really talking about that fine line between, you know, when we talked sharing, stealing, there's a line there. And now we're talking sharing, openly just sharing, because, hey, Jennifer rocks, Jeff rocks, woo, right? To the point where I'm getting paid by a company to be kind of their contracted tweeter, you know, basically, or their contracted status update. And we brought up Kim Kardashian because she's kind of known in the Twitter space for being one of those people. She will take money to, you know, to tweet about your product,
yep.
Company, service, whatever. It's just an additional revenue stream for Ms. Kardashian.
And it's disclosed.
And it is,
yep.
Disclosed.
Right.
And I think that's really key. So, you know, we're talking about, this is kind of, I don't know if black and white is the right word, but this is, for lack of a better analogy right now, black and white legal disclosure, you know. But there's also, and this is where we'll just have to have a more of a conversation, mm-hmm. around this, whether or not it's smart marketing and
right.
smart branding on the internet in the social space, because it is such a giving space.
At the beginning about, you know, posting content, anytime you have that little feeling in your gut that's a little,
right.
Don't do it.
Right.
Disclose or step away from it.
Right.
Yes.
Because you're walking up against your ethical fence, and you're just, you know, you're debating whether you're going to step over it or not.
Yeah.
And if you think you're there, then don't go there. And I think that a lot of people don't realize there are ethics involved with social media.
Right.
It's a very new place, and it has its own set of complications. And either, like Jeffrey's saying, there will be social media lawyers in the future.
Yes.
It has its own unique twists about it. And so a lot of the ethical stuff up till now has either been based on the history of what people have done in the past in other industries that we can compare ourselves to, or the gut.
Right.
You go off the gut and you say, I'm going to type this, and then I'm going to delete it because I just feel a little weird about it, and I'm not going to go there.
Well, and on top of that, I think when something does happen, like the Domino's experience, or any time that there's a negative, you know, it's kind of the one, you know, everyone's going along fine, then there's the one bad thing.
Yeah.
That usually also sparks the next regulation, or the next how we're going to deal with this guideline, for example.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I guess if you're a business owner that's listening today, or someone in business that this is an area that you're looking at, considering, is to really have someone like Jeff on your team to consult with before you dive into these waters. You know, really understand what the repercussions are and what your guidelines should be.
Right, and we've kind of recognized that at our firm, and I'm glad you mentioned about having the lawyer on the team to talk about some of this stuff. We've been going back and forth, and we finally decided to create what we, you know, it's in the beginning, you know, we haven't rolled it out to the world, but it's coming, is a kind of an e-compliance kit,
mm.
where you not only get to deal with your terms of use, your privacy policies for your website. If you're doing an email newsletter, we can talk about the CAN Spam Act, which is a whole different discussion about
right.
what, you know, the guidelines for email marketing. We have the FTC guidelines on the blog posts, and you know, just everything else that goes into that. And we've put together a package, so there's a flat fee, and you can contact us, and you get an hour of time with one of our attorneys to customize it. And the advantage of it is, you know, you're dealing with myself and a couple of partners that actually use this stuff.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
Rather than just reading about it in a journal or something
yep.
like that. We're using it. We understand it. We know, you know, all these legal issues, just like any other business transaction. There's kind of one of my first days of law school, I was given an article, and there was a quote in there, and it said, part of being a good lawyer is telling your client they're a damn fool and they should stop doing what they were doing. And, you know, we get back to, like, online reputation management, some of those things, and I'll give you an example. And every time we talk about social media law, I have to bring this one up. The unicorn meat debacle of on April 1st of this year, there was a blog, the website thinkgeek.com, and every April Fool's, they run a joke product ad. It's fake,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Well, this year they did canned unicorn meat with extra sparkles, and they had this can that looked like a can of Spam, and they showed pictures of the meat, and they even put a recipe on there as to...
Nummy.
Exactly. Well, they also said unicorn, the new other white meat.
Right.
Which, of course, the other white meat mm-hmm. is a trademark of the National Pork Board.
Yes.
The National Pork Board was represented by a large law firm, which does have an office in Minneapolis. They will go nameless for this discussion. I'm sure everybody can find it online. And, you know, this was a parody, obviously, and there is some exceptions to all the infringement actions for parodies. And for whatever reason, the law firm did go forward with a cease and desist letter to... this website over their infringement of the mark by displaying this fake product ad for unicorn meat. And as my partner Marshall Tanick, who does a lot of defamation stuff, says, a lot of times I become very famous online because of my cease and desist letters. You know, you can
right.
Let's be honest, the cyberspace, the blogging space, it is like the Wild West, and you get a few cowboys in there and that aren't very pro-authority, and if they get a letter from a lawyer, the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to put it up on their website and they're
right.
going to mock the letter. So the 12-page cease and desist letter over unicorn meat ended up on thinkgeek.com mocking it.
Oh, dear.
And I have, I have contacts in the meat industry, and they said this got picked up through their e-journals, whatever they read. People were furious that the pork board ended up wasting money pursuing this. So there's an example of reputation management gone horribly awry because
yeah.
they took the opportunity, because they turned around when the gut reaction was to go to the lawyer. So there are some cases where and this is why it helps to have a lawyer who gets the other side of this, is you have to think about the practical effect of whatever course of action you're going mm-hmm. to take is going to happen online, because like Jennifer said before, when it shows up online, it's damn near permanent.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Well, and it is. It's turning into more and more of not only a legal issue, but the marketing and the branding, and is it worth our time, energy, resources to pursue this, knowing that there could be a backlash or it could be something. You know, at the end of the day, and we don't have to go into great detail on this particular one as well, but here in the Twin Cities, the big one this year was Target, and the funding they provided a political action committee here in the Twin Cities for candidates that were pro-business, and because of that, there was a big backlash with the GLBT and Alliance community. Now, what was fascinating about that was not only a legal or a conversation around legalities, which it was legal for them to give the money where they gave it, but the other piece was the brand management.
Mm-hmm.
And just that. So I think you mentioned, Jen, that these things come out because of instinct, but also because someone tried something and then went, oops. That's what people are going to say now. You don't know.
I think it's unique to this area, and I could be wrong, but as a Minnesota girl, let me know what you think.
Yeah.
We're like the land of passive aggressiveness.
Oh, yes.
So we're not the kind of person, if we trip over something in your store and it hurts our foot, to go up to the manager and say, I demand somebody address this right now.
Right.
Midwesterners are so much more likely to go back and get on the Facebook
yes.
and send some Facebook messages to Darlene and Gladys and whatever and say,
right.
I was in so-and-so's store, and then I stepped on the whatever and the blah, blah, blah. And I find that, like, for Midwestern businesses, this can be your brass ring.
Yeah.
Because this is going to give you access to those conversations that people are not going to. In New York, they might walk up and be like, what is this? It's unacceptable.
Right.
They're not going to do that here in Minnesota.
That's a perfect point. It goes back to, it used to be what we just talked about in our kitchens or, as we were just chatting on the phone, and now we've got this entire, and there is something along with that, and I love my Midwest folks. Do not get me wrong. I'm a Minnesota girl through and through, Minnesota farm girl, but people crack me up, seriously, because we will say things on the Facebook
yes.
that we would never say.
Right.
or be meaner than you would.
Oh my
gosh!
There's nothing like the passive aggressive tweet or Facebook status. It's just I do kind of chuckle at some of those.
But. Well, and to go back to Jeffrey's example about the unicorn meat, one thing I think people who are engaged in a conversation about a negative thing with a person on their social channel. So somebody says, I purchased your product and it broke and I hate you. The more you get bogged in the back and forth, the more that is boosting that person's search ranking.
Right.
and that there's a little bit of a trick that's going on the back end, that the longer you drag this out, the more coverage, the more attention you're going to attract to it, because you're basically conducting your business in a bubble. So if you walk by a bubble and there's two people that have, like, you know, put their fists up and they're going to fight, well, everybody's going to stop and say,
right,
did you see the bubble over there?
We still love the train wreck.
We want to go look at that.
Yeah.
If you just say, listen, I'm not going to go there. I'm real sorry you're mad and I'll call you.
Right.
Let's take this offline.
Take it offline. Yeah.
And do that. And then, like Jeffrey said earlier, from a search perspective, start talking about something else a lot.
Yes.
And that conversation, people's attention spans are so very minuscule now that it's pushed down in their minds, and you replace that information, the bad information, with as much good as fast as possible.
Well, and I know I just tell folks, think about how you use the internet. That's probably how most people are using it. So I can't even tell you the last time I went to page 2 of Google for anything.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
I'm still looking not only at page 1, now that there is the live search element in Google, I'm literally like half page. I'm like looking, if it ain't there, next.
Yeah.
And that's a pro and a con, obviously, in any situation. But in these situations, that means that if you're doing some of this activity well, you can push down the bad stuff fairly quickly, actually.
You know, and the other issue, and you know, we probably should say something about it, when we're talking about reputation management, the other legal issue is not just an intellectual property issue or a reputation issue. It becomes an HR issue for companies.
Uh-huh.
What are the employees saying on Twitter, on Facebook?
Right.
Are they identifying themselves with our company? And what steps can we or should we take to regulate that?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of companies have employee handbooks.
Yes.
And it's in talking with my friends in the HR community, it's becoming standard operating procedure now to include within the employee handbook, or somehow, if there is no handbook, some separate social media policy. You know, what are the employees, are they going to, when they're using, the employer's time, when they're using the employer's machines, what are they allowed to do? Who is allowed to speak? And, it's an HR issue and it's a marketing issue. And what are they saying that reflects on our company?
Right.
And I can give you a real life example, our law firm. We have a policy in place where attorneys have access to Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn during the day, and the staff does not. And because it's going to be the attorneys that are out, would be the ones out on Facebook promoting the firm,
sure,
promoting a program, publishing an article, something like that, talking about a case victory. The staff probably isn't.
Right.
And so it was a decision made that it was, and there's no hard and fast rule yet. I mean, this is all a developing area of the law. You know, the social, you know, online compliance is as much a developing area for employment law as it is for intellectual property law in terms of specific, you know.
Right.
And it's only going to evolve over time as you get into, you know, talk about the FTC guidelines. When the FTC has an enforcement action, then we'll know more about, you know, better guidance as to how they're going to police this. When there's lawsuits and there's court decisions, then we'll know more about some of the how some of this stuff is going to be policed. But you know, there's no hard and fast rule right now. But like you know, the company has to make a decision: who is going to be speaking for us online, and what do we do about everybody else that isn't going to be?
Well, and that social media policy piece, it is coming up in conversations more and more. And, you know, one of the things, you know, Jeff and I, you and I have talked in the past about the employee handbook, you know, how important it is to meet with someone that only, not only your HR, but someone in an attorney background, because mm-hmm. every company is different. You know, mm-hmm. just take
yep.
the retail store employee handbook and copy it and make a few changes and start using it for your service business. It just doesn't work. really social media policy is turning into an extension or a separate handbook, per se, for your companies, right? Every company is different. Every company is, and I would think even more so because now we're dealing with personalities. Like, that was not an issue in the employee handbook arena. We're talking about personalities, and we've heard of the horror stories. So what are some best practices? What should I start? If I'm thinking about that for my company right now, what are some directions that you guys can provide?
Well, it does all depend on your profession. And one of the first questions is, if you're in an industry that's regulated, what is the regulating authority saying about it? For example, financial advisors and financial planners.
Right.
You know, the use of LinkedIn, the use of Facebook, the use of Twitter blogging. You know, some companies, some financial companies will have pre-approved content that someone could use to post online.
Right.
A lot of them just say you can't do it.
Right.
And it comes into the endorsements that can be made on LinkedIn. You know, all those kinds of things. You know, for the legal profession, okay, there's some state bar associations that said that attorneys, you know, litigation attorneys can't be friends on Facebook with judges that they would be in front of.
Okay.
You get into issues with that. So, you know, take those two professions as an example. You have to comply. You don't want to get back to what Jennifer said about the ethics. You don't want to have an ethics complaint over something you posted on Facebook or your LinkedIn account.
Right.
You know,
right.
You got to go there first.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to when other businesses. Then you have to come down. It's going to come in. It's going to factor into the personalities of the people who are involved. Do you have a marketing officer? Do you have a person who's in charge of that? Do you have a business development person? Maybe they're the one that should be having access to this and others, you know, maybe not. Or, you know, is it the CEO? Or, you know, it all depends on people's capabilities, people's understanding of the medium, you know, what their role is with the company. All those things, I guess, kind of loosely based guidelines, I would say, in terms of who should be doing it, who should have access, and who shouldn't.
We're seeing a lot of battles within companies because everybody wants a piece of this pie.
Right.
Marketing, PR,
well,
sales,
it can be used.
Customer service.
I mean, goodness gracious. We tend to start in marketing because that seems to be the natural fit, but at the end of the day, practically every department can effectively use it if they know what they're doing.
We talk about, you know, does your company have a CLO, your chief listening officer? And that's the person, generally, it tends to historically have been the role of PR.
Sure.
To sit on the front lines and listen to conversations and say, this is going to be a marketing concern. This is a sales concern with one of our products. This is customer service. Somebody just went to one of our stores and had a bad experience. And can kind of traffic some of it. So they're not answering every single question.
Right.
But they're kind of, again, they're actually serving as the air traffic controller in front of this dashboard to manage some of that those conversations. So I think that What I'm seeing is like two very, very different extremes. Some companies are coming to me and asking if I can script all of the social media language that they use. And I'm like, why?
Right. It's kind of hard to do.
You know, when you're on the phone with somebody and the tech support and they're reading the script, you pretty much know that. And
exactly.
It doesn't feel real, authentic. And I could never script all the possible permutations of engagement you could have with all people in the universe at any time or any channel.
No.
That's just, you're never going to have that.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, you know, like Jeffrey's saying, for some companies, you may not want to even go there. You're just not ready, and that's okay. For other companies, you need to make that decision. Or are we going to be able to let go enough to say, this is going to be conversational and it will not be perfect at all times? And if you can't accept that you're dealing with people, and people are unpredictable and unruly, and
people are messy.
They're messy.
People say messy
things, and they make mistakes and whatever. That's the nature of this forum. And
right.
If you're going to play there, it's going to be a little messy, and you have to accept that. On the flip side, I'm also seeing companies that are saying, okay, here's our social media people, and I will give them a social strategy, and they're like, okay, we're good. And I'm like, well, do you want to train these people? Because you need to be speaking with a unified voice of the brand.
Right.
You all need to be approaching it in the same sort of way. You need to have a content strategy. You need to have an engagement strategy. You need to have a crisis communications plan.
Right.
So that if something happens, that they all freeze and say, okay, does this go to Joe? Or do we have him? You can't stop and say, on next Wednesday, let's have a meeting about this guy who's so mad at us right now.
Right.
That's going to on the schedule for next Wednesday. You don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
And so I'm also seeing people who are like, who are very much, we got it covered. I'm on the Facebook at home. I'm pretty comfortable with this, so I think we're good. And I'm like, you know what? You wouldn't trust your brand in any other space with a bunch of people with no training.
Right.
So I don't know why you would say, okay, we're going to put some interns on that. And they're going to sit on the front lines, and, you know, they're right out of college. They love those social things.
Well, they know technology.
Exactly.
I think that's one of the biggest mistakes we can make in business is we attach this to simply technology.
Yeah.
I recently was asked to speak for an organization, and I'm not going to go into details. I had a great time, great people. But I was in the information technology track speaking about social media. And it was not so much, I mean, I, of course, accepted it as is because it's an education element.
Yeah.
It's where I think a lot of people automatically assume it needs to go. If it's not IT, it's marketing. And it's kind of this battle going on right now. But you bring up such a valid point of training. And this is something that really, to be enveloped inside an organization, in my humble opinion, from the top down, it has to be something that the very top, you mentioned the CEO, Jeff, even if he or she is not the one to be doing the listening on a day-to-day basis, he or she does need to own this as being a part of the organization so that there's a, you know, some an openness amongst employees and departments that we can start to play in this space with authenticity.
I think the barrier to entry is so minute.
Yeah.
You're on and it's free and whatever, and people do it in their personal life.
Yeah.
That they feel like they've got it.
Yeah.
And using social media for your business, particularly a large business, is a complicated procedure. There's issues we've even talked about tonight with ethics and legal issues that people probably haven't even thought of. Talking about the analytics of this, talking about this, the optimization of your social channels. There's whole fields of study that are kind of evolving around what you're doing.
And applications coming out of the woodwork every day,
and
people.
Every day, you know, I just looked at some Twitter slides that I'd done a year ago, and I can't use any of these.
Yeah, isn't
it's
it crazy?
It's a completely new playing field.
It's exhausting.
But one thing I'd like to say, particularly to this audience who's listening, is I think it's an awesome time to be a small business owner.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing a lot of these big companies struggling so much with the loss of control and the need to be flexible and iterative in the space. And some of them just don't have it in them.
Right.
A giant company is not going to say, take my brand, go viral, talk about it, whatever, make a funny video with a unicorn, whatever. But you as a small business owner can say, let's try this. Oh, that's not working. Let's tweak it a little bit. Now let's try this. Okay, let's do this. That's really fun. People like that a lot. Let's do more of that. And you don't have to schedule a meeting for next month for the team to sit down and talk about that and decide if you want to, you know, come up with a new strategy. You have a lot of strength in this field that a big corporation does not because the inherent nature of the medium is scary.
Well, and we can change so much faster. We can, we're pliable. I mean, a small business is much more pliable, which allows us to be even flatter in terms of the opportunity, and that's so exciting. So I agree. It's now is the time to start putting your toe in the water, and at the same time, because, you know, we could, my guess is we're probably going to have to come back to this conversation in maybe 3 months, 6 months, because there'll be all sorts of new examples, guidelines, maybe regulations, or a new, you know, maybe Kim Kardashian, something went wrong. We need to talk about it, you know. And I think that's kind of what's exciting and scary and why so many businesses struggle. So as we wrap up our conversation today, because believe me, we could go on forever, I swear, and hopefully our audience is getting some great stuff today. Any last tip, suggestion, anything in terms of from a legal perspective, other than for sure sitting down and talking to someone like yourself, Jeff, in terms of, you know, I need a social media policy, what are my do's and don'ts? Any last little piece of advice?
Well, that would be my piece of advice is, you know, we're talking to both of us. If you don't know what you're doing from a brand management, brand strategy standpoint,
yes.
If you don't know what you're doing from a legal standpoint in terms of are you complying or not, then you need to hire somebody to help you. Otherwise, I mean, you know, like Jennifer said, social media can be a great leveler for a small business versus a big business. But if used wrong, it's just going to create big problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like putting in like 600 voicemail lines and then not picking up the voicemail on any of them.
Right.
Just letting those phones ring and ring and ring.
Well, you know, one of the analogies I've used, Jen, is if you were going to be on the 5 o'clock news tonight, would you watch it and would you tell your friends to watch it?
Mm-hmm.
My guess is probably or pretty much yes, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is really what we're talking about. I joke that it's called media. It's media, so maybe you should be checking it out and paying attention. So get that policy in place, and of course, hire the advisors that are going to be a best fit to get this done for you, because we as advisors, whether it's attorney, social media, public relations, you're in your space every day, 7 days a week, and this is why we have this show, so that as business owners we can connect with you. So let's do just that. Jeff, how can I, if I want to find out more, maybe connect with you as you build this e-commerce kit and things that you're doing, or this e-communications kit, what's a great way to connect with you? How do I learn more?
Well, it's not hard to find me online. Probably the best place is the show's website, nextstagebusinessradio.com.
Excellent.
And take a look at, you know, the company website's there, my personal website, which has my blog, is there, links to my Facebook, Twitter, you know, all that stuff is there. So just go there, look at my profile, and follow the links and check them out.
And start following his Twitter feed or send him a DM. Excellent. And Jennifer, how can we connect with you? We've talked a lot about social media, a little bit of branding, marketing, yep. And of course the big talk here was legal, and those are places that you have to be aware of in terms of what you do. So how can we connect more with you if we have questions?
Well, I'm so glad Jeffrey went first, because yes, you should check out my profile on the Next Business Radio site. That's
absolutely
a good point. My company's site is Kane Consulting, which is with a K, like citizen, which if you're of a certain
movie
name,
buff,
you will get that. K-A-N-E, and then the word consulting, .biz. I am also on the Twitter.
The Twitter.
Quite a bit. And my Twitter name is Jen Kane Co., J-E-N-K-A-N-E-C-O. I am also on probably a dozen other social channels, so... I try to identify what is the person's preference for communication. Some people like talk on the phone. Some people like the email. Some people only tweet me. And then I go to you. If you want to be a LinkedIn friend with me, then we'll hang out on LinkedIn together.
You know, and that might be a great topic for a future part of our advisor show, is just basic communication. And now more than ever, the customer has always had a big role in a business. But now more than ever, boy, does the customer really control the branding and the reputation, and it's exciting and scary, like I said before. And this conversation, I'm even thinking about some things that I've put out there. I'm even thinking about this show right now. What am I saying? It's out there.
Kim Kardashian is still going to be mad at us.
I may have to make sure that's a keyword, just so that she checks us out. But I appreciate both of you being on today, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your advice. We will definitely have a round two at some time in the future, just because the guidelines and laws will change. I know they will. It's such a beginning place. So, as always, thank you so much, Jeffrey O'Brien, business attorney from Mansfield Tanaka Cohen, and, of course, Jennifer Kane, Kane Consulting. Thank you guys for being with us, and we appreciate you guys as listeners as well. Listening to our social media and the law, hope you got a bit or two today that will really help you move forward in your business. Next week, we have Pam Ricker is back. She is our CPA advisor, Ricker & Associates, and joining her is another new advisor to the team. His name is Bernie Schwab, and he's with Spruce Valley Payroll. And we're going to have a conversation about accounting, employees, payroll, when to start it, how to start it, and how that all connects the dots with your financials, and, of course, your business planning, all very important part. And we're getting set here as we roll out 2011. It's going to be here soon. We need to have these conversations. So, as always, thanks to my guests, my advisors, and to you, the listeners. And in the meantime, make it a great week.
This has been a presentation of the Next Stage Business Radio Network.